Welcome to another episode of Pat the Fat Man. We like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man.
Otherwise known as Bruce. Coming at you with our fourth installment of Mr. Rogers' Rabbits and Who's Framed All of Them. It was the Weasels. That's who framed them. I don't know if the Weasels were involved, to be honest.
In the actual framing? No.
It was all Judge Dredd.
Yes.
Or Judge, whatever his name is.
Judge Doom.
Doom. I was joking that it was Judge Dredd, but that, I mean, I am the law. Judge, jury, and executioner all rolled into one. Just how all good justice systems should work.
What?
What? Just saying. Our system is ineffective and it will eventually collapse.
I think we need to have another podcast on this because we definitely go an hour into that.
Yeah, well, we're not here to solve the world's problems for our tagline.
And yet you said what you said.
I did, didn't I? And it was beautiful.
Was it?
Possibly the most glorious thing ever spoken on this podcast ever.
How high are you right now?
I don't know. I'm like on the second story.
What?
You asked how high I was. And I'm on the second story. So I don't know. My house is on a hill. So
we got to get you off this movie. You're starting to go Looney Tunes.
It's pretty high above sea level. Hey, you want my spare?
Too soon. Too soon.
I don't think you want it. I want it. Give it to me. Give me the spare.
Where we left
how far,
off.
How far into this are we already? We haven't even started talking about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Actually, we did talk. It was the Weasels. No, wait, that's right.
It's not that's
the
how Weasels. You got off track. Yes, was the
that's,
Weasels.
That's how I got off on a different railroad track, which, interesting enough, is important for this movie.
Sort of. It's not really a railroad track, though.
Well, it talks about building the Cloverleaf through Toontown.
Yes, but it's not a railroad. Right. It's not a train.
No, they're trains. They're no, like,
it's a trolley.
Okay. I mean,
there's a difference.
I mean, it's a large moving metal car.
That's a lot of things.
On wheels on a track. I don't. I grant you, under the subset of the superset trains, it's a trolley, but it's a train.
It's not. It's a trolley. It's different.
No, they're not. Their trolley is like a subset of trains.
Listen, this is why we have the internet, because I absolutely want to hear other people. I want to see like a thread get shut down over the debate of trolley versus train. But
yeah, if we could destroy Reddit over this, just have it utterly melt down. Wow. Or whether it's a train or trolley.
There's no destroying Reddit. There's only making it stronger, Pat.
Yeah, I know. It's like AIDS. Or COVID. I don't care which one you pick.
Okay. Getting back to the movie. So where we left off, Eddie Valiant had just gotten out of the cuffs and told Dolores that he wants her to go down to the probate office.
Not prostate, probate.
And find out what she can about Toontown. And then he was leaving to go across the street back to his office. And that's where we kind of left off.
Yeah.
Because we're about to walk into one of the most iconic lines in cinema, really. So when he gets back there, what we see first is the door of his office being closed and the silhouette of Jessica Rabbit walking, having already entered the room.
And what a silhouette. I mean, woo-wee!
That's nothing compared to what's coming up.
Yeah, I know. Like, oh my gosh.
And how well they've done the animation with the live action in this movie.
Yeah.
Anyways, you see Eddie Valiant coming out of the bathroom with no shirt, a tie around his neck, and his pants still up, but the suspenders having been left down. So he's kind of holding his pants up.
So pants could fall down.
Right.
As any fat man knows. if you don't have a belt or suspenders or something. Listen,
you don't need to out me out loud like
at
that.
At any right? moment.
You don't need to out we're me like that. We're both in this that together. Cool. Yes, I'm not, like, hey, we're, hey, one of us is called the fat man here, okay? Don't try to horn in on my territory.
How is it outing you then? You're called the fat man. That's literally your moniker.
But we don't need your help, man.
What do you mean we? Are you so big now you're going by we? Is that what? Is that what's happening here?
What did I just say? They don't need your help.
Do you have an orbit, Bruce?
That's for NASA to figure out. Anyways, we got a podcast to do here, sir.
What the hell is that? That's orbit, Peter.
You got your own gravity. Anyways, Valiant comes out of the bathroom, turns the corner, and there's Jessica Rabbit holding a mirror saying, I'm a pawn in this just like Roger, Mr. Valiant.
Wait, holding a mirror? Is it like a makeup mirror? Or?
No, I think it's just like a mirror. It's like in a frame.
Is she like looking at herself in it? Or
she was, and then she tilts it so she's looking at Valiant.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he's like, you expect me to believe that? You know, you need the rabbit to make this scam work. And she's like, no. I love my husband. You've got it all wrong. And she says, you don't know how hard it is to be a woman looking the way I do. And then he says, yeah, well, you don't know how hard it is to be a man looking at a woman the way you look.
Good double entendre there. Right. It's a wordplay. Bravo, Eddie Valiant. Bravo.
Way to go, Disney.
Yeah.
Then she says the classic line, I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way. And honestly, I mean, this has got to be in the AFI top 100 movie quotes, because, I mean, it's just one line out of movies that you just know, just, you know, from being alive, really.
I mean, let's talk about it a little bit. Like, why is this such an iconic line?
In a funny way, it's a self-realization kind of thing. She knows she's a cartoon, and she knows that she's drawn a certain way. And so she's basically saying, it's not my fault that I am the way I am. It's just how I was made.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting. Once they, you know, like, that's not a person per se. Like, you could believe that a cartoon would be bad if it's drawn bad. And that's not the way it is with humans. It's not how they look that makes them good or bad. It's how they're raised and how they behave.
You know, this brings up again the whole nurture versus nature argument. And, you know, the Toons falling much more on the side of the nature side of the ball, right? They're drawn that way, right? And that's really the only allusion we get to how these beings come into existence, right? Uh-huh. We don't know how they are gifted with the spark of life exactly, but we know, you know, that they're drawn, or at least it's possible that using the word drawn when referring to Toons instead of born is just the way, the euphemism that's used, and there may be some whole other process, who knows. But it really does play into that, because then you have, you know, you have a lot of people who say the same thing about themselves as human beings. People aren't bad, but the things they do are bad, right? You know, that's what Lilo says to Stitch, and she's correct. You know, right. You're not bad. You know, the things you do are bad.
Well, then we also got the example from Wreck-It Ralph. Just because you're a bad guy doesn't mean you're a bad guy.
Yeah, just because you are a bad guy doesn't mean you are a bad guy. I don't entirely understand. But, you know, it, by the end he gets it. He's holding on to the heart and he's like, I'm bad. You know, I'm not good. And that's not bad. There's a role, right? Because we're talking about video game characters, or we're talking about cartoons, you know, that they're meant to play, that they're portrayed as. But then there's this, well, who are they really, right? And what she's saying is, I'm not just what I'm drawn to be.
Right.
You know, it's interesting because she goes into the fact, you know, I don't expect that she has much, if any, control over her appearance. Unlike a human being who has the ability to style the hair and
change their eye color through contacts, you know, and
yeah,
you know, all sorts of things that they do in the small sense, or, you know, in the big sense in plastic surgery and things like that.
You know, I mean, it wear radically different clothing, wear radically different makeup, don't wear makeup. Like, there's the things you can do to your appearance are very drastic. You can make yourself look extraordinarily different. You look at actors and actresses in and out of makeup and they almost look like a completely different person. That's not necessarily true for the Toons.
Right.
Like, she is that way all the time. And she's effectively drawn for the 11 p.m. review at the nightclub. But that's how she is at, you know, 10 a.m. in the morning when eating her moons over my hammy at Denny's. Like that's just what she looks like all the time. You know, in a lot of ways, her kind of trying to explain to Valiant is not just her trying to explain to Valiant. It's trying to explain to everybody, like, this isn't necessarily me, right? Just because I look like this and I have to look like this all the time, it's not who I am. Whereas, you know, I think people can get caught in that trap, too. They can start thinking of themselves as I am this thing or this way, and they can, you know, wear the costume and the outfit and play the part. But the reality of it is the internal piece is the most important part. And I think that's why it's such an iconic line, is because that's the truth she's really trying to convey, is that who she really is the most important part, not just generally, but in very specifically in this situation. She's not out like a sleazy dame would be out to screw over her husband and, you know, get the money or, you know, get Toontown or whatever. She really does love her husband, as crazy as that is, in the same way that Roger loves her.
I think that's spot on.
I think that's why it's one of those iconic lines, because it speaks the truth we all know, whether or not we choose to acknowledge it. But the reality is, we're not just a sum of our natures. We have a lot in us. That is our choice. That is our what we've decided to go forward with. It's not all just circumstance.
Going on from that iconic line, Valiant responds back and goes, "Weren't you the one I caught playing patty cake with old man Acme?" And she explains, "You didn't catch me. You were set up to take those pictures. That RK Maroon wanted me to do those pictures to blackmail Acme, and said that if she didn't do those pictures, that RK Maroon would make sure that Roger never acted ever again in that city." And she explains that she would do anything for her husband, and she reiterates anything as she bumps her chest up against Valiant. And you hear the comedic boom.
It's just such a ridiculous, like the games they play with that throughout the course of this show are pretty hilarious. They do have fun with those fun bags. Boing. Yeah, just. And I do mean anything, Mr. And she, but see, and that's juxtaposed against what she just said. Like, and now she's playing into being the sleazy harlot. Like, she's drawn.
Well, she's playing into being the devoted wife, in the sense that she wants the best for her husband, no matter what it takes from her.
Is there a Mr. Gump? Mrs. Gump? And wouldn't you know, I got to go to school.
So it's at this moment that Jessica tries to put her hands on Valiant, and he, instead of holding his pants up, decides he's going to hold her hands by the wrist away from him, thus allowing his pants to drop. And it's at that moment she says, "I'm desperate, Mr. Valiant. Can't you see how much I need you?" And that's when Dolores walks into the room.
Yeah. You get this shot with Valiant and Jessica Rabbit, with her up, all up in his business, all up in his space, with his hands holding her hands by the wrist, and his pants on the ground. And is it like heart boxers? I can't even remember. It's no, something
common. They're in watercolors, because her comments are dabbling in watercolors, Eddie.
Oh yeah, that's right.
He realizes his pants are down and tries to pick them up real quick, and so right then, as he's trying to pick up his pants, he goes to stand up, and you can see that his head hits Jessica Rabbit's chest, and they move, they bounce.
Oh my gosh, do they bounce.
And he goes, sorry. And it was like, you got to think about that from a filming stance. Like, that could not have been done on the first try. That had to be an accident. And they go, okay, we got to go back, Bob, and do that again. And this time, when you lift your head, you got to realize that you hit your head on her chest, and then you got to apologize for that. Because there's no way you did that on the first try. There's no way you would have known that the space he needed and whatnot.
Yeah, because he probably just stood right up the first time and then it's like, no, that's not how that would go. You're going to hit your head on some imaginary chess pieces.
Jessica turns to leave and says, goodbye, Eddie. My offer stands firm. She blows him a kiss and like red lips come off of her face like they're butterfly and just float in the air and it's hit Eddie right in the cheek.
Yeah.
And Jessica Rabbit saunters right out of the room. And of course, it's just Eddie and Dolores in the room. And well, here comes the old ball and chain.
Rips it right off of his face. So like flings it to the window or something. I can't.
No, she just drops it on the floor and she's like, you know, what do you think you were doing with her hands around you? And she's like, she was probably looking for a good place to stick a knife. And she goes, oh, come on, Eddie, I caught you with your pants down. So it's like right of a classic, like literally catching him with his pants down.
Yeah, I love like when she comes in and he realizes his pants are down, like the double take he does, like looking down, like, oh, like, this doesn't look good. Dolores!
Right, so he goes chasing after her because she storms out and he's like, you don't believe a painted hussy like that could turn my head. And he's like, says, oh, come on, she's just trying to get to me so she should get her hands on the rabbit. And she exclaims, that's not all that she wants. And he's like, oh, hey, come on, you know, look, go out and get yourself a new bathing suit because we're going to go to Catalina like in the old days because I'm on the verge of wrapping up this case. And she goes, no, you're not, Eddie. That's what I came to tell you was that Cloverleaf put in the biggest bid for Toontown to buy Toontown, not RK Maroon.
Right. Effectively, in this scene, we have the plot thickens moments.
Right.
We have Jessica Rabbit explaining to Eddie that no, what she was doing was not playing patty cake around on her husband with another animator, you know, with Acme. She was actually working for Maroon in the same way that he was, so that he was set up to take those pictures so that the framing could happen, right? Which points everything at Maroon, right? So obviously Maroon's our prime suspect. But then we hear Cloverleaf, which is this new outfit that just bought the Red Line, right? So obviously very relatively powerful, relatively well-funded, has to be well-funded, right? Because they just bought out a trolley car system.
A transportation company, yeah. Yeah,
a train.
You son of a...
I'm going to have like 14 different laughs by the time this podcast is over.
And one big boot up your...
So obviously a very well-moneyed organization because they can also put the prime bid down on Toontown, whatever that happens to be. So you have to assume that the question is, well, what's the deal with Maroon, right? Because you got two leads now, either go after Cloverleaf or go after Maroon. Well, Maroon's probably the way to go, and that is, of course, the way Eddie decides to take this. Because if Maroon isn't the prime bidder, then what does he get out of Acme's death? Because that's what everything's about, right? Why did Acme have to die? Roger gets framed because he's convenient, but why did Acme have to die? If Maroon's not going to get Toontown out of it, what is he getting?
Now we don't know what's really going on because you thought it was Arcane Maroon that was behind this whole thing, and now you're just like, Cloverleaf, and who the hell is Cloverleaf, and why do they want to buy up everything? It's at that moment, even though Eddie's kind of confused, his hearing still works and he goes, wait a minute, where's all this music, loud music coming from? And he realizes it's coming from across the street, back into the bar. And he's like, oh no, it's Roger. And he goes tearing off with Dolores. And as they're running towards the bar, you see the weasels come up from the sewers saying, hey, it's the rabbit, go get the judge. It's a little weird on how the weasels work because you're not sure they work independently or not. Like, why would they have needed... They didn't need the judge before when they were trying to look for the rabbit when they went to Valiant's place, but now they need the judge to go into the bar.
Yeah. The operation of the weasels and the judge I'm not going to call it lazy writing, but it kind of is. Like, it's
whatever's convenient.
Right. This is what we convenient writing. This is what we need to have happen for the story to move forward. If the judge is there, like we went over, if the judge is there in the washing scene, then the rabbit gets caught. Game over. So we don't need him there. We need the weasels. And I assume in this scene, they're there as spies, right? They're put in. The judge basically tells them their spies is not necessarily the right. They're on stakeout, effectively. Mm-hmm. So they're not in their weasel wagon. They're they're in the sewer because why wouldn't they go there? They're right. Weasels spying out, trying to find out because they think he's with Valiant somewhere, somehow.
So when we go into the bar, we see all the patrons are gathered around the bar, and Roger is doing a whole singing and dancing routine, like a comedy singing and dancing routine. He's just dancing over the bar, making fun of, you know, the patrons, including, what's his name? Angelo, the guy that was giving Eddie a hard time.
The egg sucker.
The egg sucker, that's right. You know, in fact, Roger, you know, twirls Angela's toupee over his head. And so he keeps going on the song in bed, talking about how he's going to make Eddie Valiant to a joker. And he talks about how nothing bothers him, Roger Rabbit, because he doesn't feel any pain. And he starts grabbing plates and bashing them over his head because the record that's playing the song has a break in it, so it starts skipping and playing over the same tune over and over. And so as it's going over and over, Roger just keeps breaking plates over his head and going,
no pain, there's no pain, no pain, no pain, no pain, pain, no pain,
no pain. Right, DeLorean, the China. Like, oh no, all my plates. And so Eddie, you know, takes the needle off the gramophone and then grabs Roger and throws him into the speakeasy room.
hardcore tune fashion.
Oh yeah, you know, he gets his head stuck in a bucket. And of course Eddie's like, what the hell are you doing? I'm out there trying to save your butt and you're singing and dancing. What's wrong with you? And Roger explains, I'm a tune, I'm supposed to make people laugh. Those people needed to laugh. And he goes, yeah, and when they're done laughing, they'll rat you out to the cops. That guy Angelo would rat you out for a nickel. And Roger goes, no, he'd never turn me in. And Eddie's like, why? Because he made you laugh? He goes, yeah, laughter is the most powerful thing, powerful force in the universe. And sometimes it's the only weapon that we have. And then in that exact moment, a red light starts flashing. And it's Dolores at the bar with the secret button telling him, you know, hey, you know, keep it down. Cops are here.
Yeah. You're about to get raided by the police. You're going to take the booze. Oh, wait, no. But, you know, that is probably, in my mind, that line Roger has is probably the most iconic line to me from this movie.
I think it's the most, like, the telling of a moral kind of line in the story. Like, that's the idea, is that, you know, laughter is very powerful and it's good in the world and that sort of thing. It's kind of like Saturday morning special, you know, the more you know kind of line.
So as a guy who laughs a lot, shockingly, I know, to anybody who's listened to this podcast more than 5 minutes, laughter really is one of the greatest gifts in the universe. Like, if we didn't have senses of humor, then what in the hell is the point?
Like, I agree. Like, I think it's more important to note that it's one of those things that can slip away from you. Like, a good-hearted sense of humor can slip away from you, and it's harder to find to get back as you get older. It's hard to sometimes when you're being snarky or sarcastic and, you know, you think your jokes are funny, but really they're just equal parts mean as they are funny. And so you become not as lighthearted, not as good natured as you'd wanted, you know, as you used to be. And it's harder to get that back when you get older.
Right. Because, you know, the world always pushes adults into the cynical humor space. Right. You know, you're not allowed to laugh, you know, have boisterous laughter. It's not proper. It's not good for adults to do that. You can make snide remarks and have, you know, quiet little laughs inside of your head, especially if it's at other people's expense. That's sort of what we get pushed on us, I think, a lot in the not just the modern world, just the world in general. You know, and I think a lot of it comes from humorless people who are in power, who don't want to see other people happy. You know, there's the, you're so poor, how can you laugh? You know, you don't have this thing going for you. How could you be in better spirits than me? Kind of anger at the common man that comes from sort of the cynical rich. Man, we went to an interesting place here, but
Oh, no, I think that that can happen just even without the help of rich people. I think there are people who were genuinely not as prosperous as they want to be. Their life isn't as carefree as they want to be. And so trying to deal with a kind of reality of that, it's harsh. And so you don't feel like laughing. You don't feel like being good natured. So you just don't exude happiness. You know, you become grumpy at little things and angry at little things. And so you need movies or you need some sort of medium that kind of brings you back to that happier place. And I say this as I'm a person who's in a relationship where I grew up with those things. I grew up with, you know, my parents made me watch, you know, Sesame Street or like Disney movies or tried to get me to be a happy child. And not that my significant other wasn't raised to try to be happy. It was just different. You know, their parents controlled like the TV or what they read or what they listened to and things like that. They didn't get the experiences like I did watching like the Muppets or even like Charlie Brown, things that normal kids would have a chance to watch. And so we're very different people as adults. You know, I definitely go out of my way to watch things that I used to watch as a kid because those things made me happy, but she never had that chance.
Yeah. And for me, a lot of it revolves around my kids. Mm-hmm. A parenthood, if you do it right, in my opinion, is a chance at a second childhood, because I can either try and control my children and make them do the things I want to do and try and live my life despite them, or I can accept the fact that, you know, kids are fun and but also crazy. And then sometimes, and maybe more often than not, I just need to accept the craziness and be a kid with them. That to me brings, you know, sort of the joy and the laughter around. And then if you're lucky enough, you get that a third time with grandkids, which is why grandparents will always tell you, you know, grandkids are way better because you get that piece of it, but you don't have to like keep the kids from dying. Uh-huh. Like, which is what parenting is, you know, that's sort of like the primary focus of parenting, but it's not necessarily the joy of parenting.
Well, it's so interesting because like I end up not having kids, but yeah, I got two siblings so far that have kids, and those siblings have grown into a world where they liked kind of the same idea of things. Like I got a niece who loves Pokemon. I got two nephews who like superhero stuff, and neither of their parents are into any of that stuff, yet I am, you know. And my parents weren't into it. None of my parents were into that stuff growing up. So it was interesting because I still got into those things, even though a lot of the parental units involved didn't understand any of it, didn't even try. I still grew up being good and lighthearted, and they never discouraged me from liking those things, you know.
Yeah. There's a certain amount of like sort of pure innocent laughter, joy that comes from children that if you lose, it's hard to get back, like we talked about. But if you can get it back, it's very uplifting. Mm-hmm. I like what Roger says here. You know, sometimes laughter is the only weapon we have. Being able to make somebody laugh, they go into the psychology of this. Like if you can make somebody laugh, like they suddenly have a trust factor with you. Like they trust you just because you can make them laugh. Like it's this crazy thing where they think, and not only that, they trust you, but they think you're a good person because you can make them laugh, especially if it's like non-cynical, non-sarcastic sort of laugh. Well, I mean, it can be a little sarcastic, but the non-cynical sort of jokes, the sort of the more absurdist humor, the humor where you're calling out the fact that life is absurd and it's kind of crazy, and that's okay.
Well, I think the reason why you trust the person that makes you laugh more is because they're the ones giving you the good feelings. They're the ones helping produce those endorphins, because I mean, the human existence a lot of times is very uncomfortable. It's not very good feeling. So you try to keep the things that make you feel good because they help you get through your existence easier.
Yeah. There are amazing medical benefits to regular laughter.
Oh, yeah.
So much so that even fake laughter, like even if you just sit down and have a fake laugh, it's better for you than not. Like if that's the best you can do. I remember listening one time to a show talking about that, and the lady was like, so if you have to, just sit down at a table in your basement and have a good laugh. Hearty har har. And I, that image was so funny to me. I laughed for 10 solid minutes.
Like, it's one of those images, you know, it's either funny or really creepy.
You're right.
Just how you picture it in your head.
Right. It's like the, you know, the 1980s, 90s romantic comedies where the guy does something and it's either, if the girl likes it, then it's super romantic. But if she doesn't like it, he's basically Charles Manson.
Right. Like,
So, yeah. So this is probably my favorite line from the movie, because I do really believe in the power of laughter. Shocking, I know, as a man who laughs constantly. And I can tell, honestly, I can tell the state of my mental health by how much laughter I'm doing. And I do have to admit, 2024 was a very laugh-free year. There was not nearly as much laughing, and 2025 is shaping up to be a lot better. So, but I can tell that about myself, like, because of the amount, you know, and everybody knows, if you know me in person, how much and how, you know, my laugh, like, everybody knows my laugh. Like, I am that guy in the theater that you either love or hate. There's no middle ground. You're either thinking to yourself the whole time, like, God, why won't this guy shut up? Or you're listening for my laugh so you can laugh along with me. Those that's the two parts. There's no other part.
See, now I can't tell who would be better to see a movie with, either you or my significant other, because she likes to talk during movies. She can't follow things. She's always going, who's that? What are they doing? What's going on? Would you just watch the movie?
See, I would be laughing at that. Right. Like, people would be looking at me like, there's nothing funny going on the screen. What are you laughing for? Just, you know, recognizable laugh, man.
Oh, it's like movie theater hell for me.
All right. I think we talked about laughter, probably not enough, but we did talk about it quite a bit. So it's important to us, folks. And we, you know, the truth of the matter is, my greatest hope for this podcast is that we get you to laugh at least once throughout the course of the show. You know, if you listen to us for an hour and you only laugh once, I'll take it. I'd rather you laughed a whole lot more than that. But if you laugh, you know, that's my goal. Is to bring some joy and some lightheartedness and do it in a non-cynical fashion, even though occasionally I go on rants. There's just so many things to love about Roger Rabbit, and this is one of the things I love.
So after the light goes off and you see Dolores having pushed the red light button under the bar and telling them to stop their ruckus, you see Judge Doom walking into the bar with the weasels behind him, and he says he's looking for a murderer.
Yep.
A cartoon rabbit, and as he's wandering around trying to, you know, like, rattle the cages, everybody in there, he goes, you know, the cartoon rabbit about, and he puts his hand on the head of a little person, you know, already, and pushes him down to one knee and says he's about that big. The rabbit's that big. Well, one, the rabbit's taller than the little person.
Yeah.
And two, he just physically assaults, you know, a person. Like, yeah. You know, it's a judge. He's like, yeah, I'm going to do what I want. Like, holy cow.
Yeah. Christopher Lloyd has such a commanding presence portraying this character. And this scene, even more than the scene where he commits the war crime against the shoe, and even more than that scene, this scene, he is just like, it just radiates off of him this sort of,
just how evil he is, and that he's on a witch hunt.
Yeah, this sort of commanding evil presence. The weasels with him doing their weasel thing, and him just literally physically assaulting several people in the bar while he describes the rabbit.
Like, right. Because, you know, Dolores says, you know, there's no rabbit here. Stop harassing my customers. And he's like, oh, I'm not here to harass them. I'm here to reward them. So he walks to the chalkboard and he takes the sleeve of the dismembered serviceman.
Oh, my gosh. And yes.
He uses it to erase the chalk on the chalkboard. And that's how different things were, like, in when this movie was made in the late 80s, early 90s to today's, because that would never fly today.
Yeah. Well, so it's a guy who's lost his arm, you know, in service to his country, who has his, you know, shoulder or has his sleeve pinned up like you do. And he takes this, it's this, like, like all of the stuff he does up to that point is head turning or you know, brow furrowing, like, man, who do you think you are? But that point you're just like, oh my gosh. Are you freaking kidding me? You're gonna use this guy who lost his arm's sleeve to erase today's special so you can write up how much money you're gonna give to somebody in the most irritating chalk scratching manner as you possibly
like just
thinking
about it. It's just like, oh man.
Yeah, see, I it's not bad for me because I'm the one making the noise.
Oh, go burn. So he writes like a, you know, he writes $5,000 reward.
Is it 5,000?
Well, there is 4 zeros, and I thought the last zero was a small one, but I can't really. I mean, so maybe it was 5,000, maybe it was 500. Either way, back in the time frame of this movie, it was a lot of money. Either way.
Holy crap. $5,000 would be $114,000 today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good gravy. Thanks, government, for all the insurance you've caused over the years. Oh, goodness.
So the first person to speak up is Angelo.
Shockingly.
He's like, hey, Judge, I've seen a rabbit. And so Valiant turns to Roger's like, see, told ya. The judge bearing down on Angelo is like, where did you see him? And Angelo just turns to the empty bar stool next to him, puts his arm out, like, say hello, Harvey. And everyone starts laughing. Roger turns to Eddie. He's like, see, I told you so. You know, the judge kind of just pushes off, calls him a bunch of drunken reprobates.
Well, so do we want to explain what Harvey is?
The Harvey Rabbit? I've heard the name. I really can't remember.
So it's from a movie. I want to say it's just called Harvey. Effectively, James Stewart is the actor, plays Elwood P. Dowd. And he's a wealthy drunk who starts having visions of a giant rabbit named Harvey. They start worrying he's gone insane, and they're looking to get him committed. And then his sister actually says she sees Harvey too on occasion. So there's a real question mark as to whether Harvey, the imaginary rabbit, is real and is just this invisible rabbit versus being an imaginary rabbit. And this is like a black and white, you know, 1930, I want to say it was 38, 39 film. So yeah, that's Harvey the Rabbit. So that's the 1950, but that's Harvey the Rabbit. So that would have been right around the time that this movie was set in, if I remember right. So this would have been a fairly recent film.
Sounds right.
Possible that several of the patrons worked on the film, since they're all, you know, Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, hands.
Right. So after that bit, the judge is still skulking around and finds the gramophone with the record still on it. And, you know, he reads off the title, The Merry-Go-Round Broke Down. Like a hound dog or something on the scent, he sniffs the record. And he's like, he's here. And he flings it. And it goes right in the mouth of one of the weasels. And all the weasels start laughing. Right. So all the weasels are laughing. The judge is yelling at him, like, you know, you just stop that laughing. You want to end up like your hyena cousins, dead, having laughed themselves to death. Yeah, so now we find out that there were henchmen before them.
Yeah.
And they were hyenas.
You know, it must have been somewhere between hilarious and terrifying to be an extra in these scenes. because like the amount of intensity coming off of him. You know, that character, the way he delivers the lines, the noise level, and the fact that many of the lines he delivers are to imaginary characters, like they're not there, like they get drawn in later. And so, you know, all of the actors are staring at, you know, open space that the judge is yelling at with like severe intensity, like somewhere between hilarious and terrifying is where I would probably put this as being an extra on the set.
Oh yeah. So after he's done with that, one of the weasels goes, hey, do you want us to tear the place apart? He goes, disresemble the place. Because he can't say words correctly. Disresemble the place.
You must disresemble the place, boss. And he says it in such a way that you really have to stop and be like, wait a minute. What he said that wrong.
What'd you say, Chief?
He said that
Make
wrong.
Him away, toys.
What'd you say, Chief? Do what the boy says. That your Bob has no decency. He called me Chief Pigum. Oh, I get it now. Oh, Hank Azaria. Such a good job.
Oh, yeah.
The cats and the dogs thing was, oh, so good. If you haven't heard it, folks, when all the eating the cats and eating the dogs stuff was happening last year, Hank Azaria did a bit with, you know, getting calls into the police station at Springfield and Police Chief Wiggum answering the phone. It is hilarious. Did that taste good? It tastes good.
So anyways, Weasel asks them if they wanted to tear the place apart looking for them, and the judge goes, there won't be any need for that. And he starts knocking on things, going, no cartoon can ever resist the shave and a haircut bit. And he just starts going around knocking on random things, going, you know,
shave and a haircut.
As he's going, knocking, getting closer and closer around the bar to where Roger and Eddie are, you can just see Roger start going kind of nuts, like trying to hold back, and, you know, because it's the comedic bit that he knows he can't do. And so, like an addict, he's like just trying his hardest to resist the urge to do the thing that he knows he can't do. Yeah. Till finally he can't take it anymore. And he bursts through the wall going, two bits.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll burst into rooms and say that, and everybody just looks at me like I'm nuts. And I'm like, you uncultured swine. Immediately gets grabbed by the judge. I like how surprised Eddie is that all this is going on, because he's watching and he's got like a smirk on his face. He's like, "Heh, this judge is off his rocker," and he looks back and then he sees that Roger's kind of going nuts.
Oh crap!
Oh no! Kool-Aid mans his way through the wall.
The wall. That's right. That's a perfect way to explain Kool-Aid man through the wall. You know, the Weasels go, hey, what do we do about Valiant? And Judge is like, I'm not going to worry about him right now. I want to dispense some justice. Bring me some dip. So the next thing you see is the judge trying to put Roger Rabbit into the dip.
The dip.
And it's at this moment that Eddie side saddles up to Dolores and says, hey, get me a bourbon, make it a double. And she's like, fine time for a drink, Eddie. What do you want, a bowl of pretzels to go with it? And he's like, just do it. And at this moment, like, everybody else in the bar starts taking their hats off, like, you know, like they're about to watch an execution. I mean, they are, but, I mean, you know, they're humans showing respect to a cartoon rabbit.
Not just any old execution, right? 1940s, 1950s, we still occasionally hung people, not very often. You know, firing squad in certain types of areas was an okay solution. But typically the death penalty is becoming more refined, right? He's going to melt a guy.
Right.
Literally melt a guy from his feet to his head, his ears. I mean, this is medieval level biblical times kind of torture death we're talking about here. They're all about to witness a melting, like,
right,
like this is equivalent to like breaking a guy on the wheel or drawing and quartering.
Pretty medieval stuff.
Right, this stuff got outlawed in the 1800s like, because it was you know, too much for the sensibilities of a post-Enlightenment Europe. But, you know, 1950s California, we're going to melt a guy.
We're going to melt a guy.
We're going to melt a guy in front of all these people. I mean, just really think about that.
Awful. It's just really awful.
Right. We see, you know, we see the war crime committed against the puppy, effectively, you know, the shoe. And now we're going to see, you know, it happened to Roger. So what Eddie does here, it's not just heroic. He's not just saving a guy's skin, right? He's keeping a whole bunch of people from having to witness what would probably be literally the worst thing they had ever seen in their life and would haunt their dreams for the entirety of their existence.
Yep.
Like, they would probably wake up screaming in the middle of the night if they had watched Roger get melted in front of them.
Even the serviceman with his one arm were like, I have seen some things. That was worse.
That was worse.
I have been to war and this is still worse.
Yeah.
It's at that moment that, you know, Eddie interrupts the judge and goes, hey, doesn't a condemned rabbit deserve a last request? And Roger, still being Roger, goes, yeah, nose plugs would be nice. He's just inches away from dying and he's still trying to crack jokes.
Inches away from being melted. I mean, think about that. Right. Think about if that's how you were told you were gonna die.
Like someone's got a gun to your head, like, you know, right in your face, and he goes, any last request? And you go, yeah, earplugs, so I don't have to hear the gunshot. I mean,
right. Yeah.
Okay. And he goes, I think you want a drink. And how about it, judge, you know? And the judge's like, yeah, sure, okay. You know, like, he's humoring him, like he wants to draw out this whole thing, you know, the joy he has over doing this. Yes, and so Eddie tries to give Roger the drink. And Roger's like, no, that's okay. I'm trying to cut down. And he goes, you want the drink? I don't want the drink. You do. I don't. You do. I don't. And Eddie changes up and goes, you don't. I do. You don't. I do. I don't. Hey, when I say that I do, I mean that I do. And then he just throws the whole thing down his throat. And if you remember from the earlier scene at the beginning of the movie, Roger has a very bad reaction to alcohol. And so
Roger has an amazing reaction to alcohol. I'm not gonna call it very bad. This is fantastic.
You want to be like Roger Rabbit when he takes drugs, like when he drinks alcohol.
You were about to say takes drugs.
It's the same to him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I don't know what that looks like, to be honest. Maybe he gets really mellow. It's the opposite. Downers are uppers, uppers are downers. Downers,
dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. So anyways, Roger, you know, he shoots off up into the ceiling like a rocket and, you know, and just makes a big whistling noise, blowing everybody away. And Eddie takes this opportunity to just start kicking, you know, the weasels around. Then at the end of it, after all of the screaming is done, Roger plummets back down and almost goes right into the barrel of dip. And Valiant catches him and then kicks the barrel towards the judge.
Yeah.
And then they take off.
Now, what's interesting from this scene is that the judge and all of the patrons back off, right?
Because they don't know what that's going to do to human beings.
Right. Ostensibly, this is some sort of combination of paint thinner and turpentine and whatnot. Shouldn't hurt human beings, right? In fact, I want to say when Eddie runs off, he actually runs through it. I'm not entirely certain on that one. I could be wrong.
That we see.
Okay. But either way, theoretically, this shouldn't be dangerous to humans, but everybody backs off, right? Because you would. Everybody would, right?
Right.
Just about to melt a guy in this stuff. Why the hell would I stick around? But the judge backs off, too. That's really the first tell you get that there's something else going on beyond this guy being effectively a psychopath. You know, there's something, there's another layer here. It's a fairly subtle tell. I think if we were to poll the audiences, I'm guessing only, you know, less than 1% would have taken that and been able to guess at what the big reveal was going to be at the end of the show. And if you haven't seen the movie yet, what are you doing with your life? Firstly, and secondly, yeah, spoilers, I guess. So and who he ends up turning out to be in the end. But seriously, go, if you haven't seen the movie, come on, go see the movie. It's amazing. Obviously, we've spent literally an hour talking about, I don't know, 5 minutes, two scenes. We got through two scenes, folks.
Right. 11 minutes of the movie. Yeah.
We somehow pulled off fewer minutes of the movie.
And we are just this side of halfway.
Yeah, I think I spent a good 10 minutes talking about iced tea in the last episode. I didn't bring up iced tea once this time. Not once.
No, not once. But we did talk about feelings and laughter and trains and trolleys.
Yeah, being drawn certain ways. But no, this was a good one. It's a lot of over kind of everywhere. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Everybody who listens to this.
I'm going to tell you for them. Yes, they did enjoy it.
Hooray!
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 Huzzah!
Huzzah! So yes. Join us next time as we continue our... So this would be 4, so it's going to take us 8 episodes to get... This might be our longest one yet. join us next time for our continued slowly taking apart Roger Rabbit and examining it from all possible angles while drinking our iced tea. Remember, we've got a Patreon. If you think we've made you laugh and we've made you laugh well enough, maybe we deserve a dollar, perhaps even a dollar a month. Go over to Patreon, look up Pat and the Fat Man, or head to our website, patandthefatman.com, and click on the patron button. Become a patron. We'd love it even more. $5, $10. We're going to start getting some merch. We're going to start giving it to our patrons. So when you sign up, you'll get some cool stuff. We've got some interesting work going on in the background with some artwork, with some AI help, which has caused a little bit of hilarity to ensue.
Because we're hip and cool.
Yes. Anyways. So if you'd like to support us, we would really appreciate it. To those who support us now, thank you so very much. We really appreciate you helping us stay on the air. And... remember, we've got a website, Facebook, Pat the Fat Man. We're on Instagram, at Pat the Fat Man, and on X, at the Fat Man 1238. So check us out. Let us know what you think. And if you become a patron, let us know what you want us to review next. Since we're halfway through this show, you could let us know. And I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
Please.
Because we've all been in that situation where we've had to hold our pants up, and that's where Eddie's at. So you can write up how much money in the most irritating chalk scratching manner as you possibly can. He's gonna melt a guy from his feet to his ears. This is medieval level, biblical times kind of torture death we're talking about here. But seriously, go, if you haven't seen the movie, come on, go see the movie. It's amazing.
You just watch the movie.